Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here. So I'm going to talk about DOE's work in the critical zone. My talk will have three parts to it. First will be kind of an overview of the DOE structure and where these kind of science programs sit within the DOE, and then a description of the science programs, and then at the end will be a brief discussion of a workshop we had. And I have workshop reports. I'll put them at the back of the room there if anybody wants on on subsurface fate and complex system science for subsurface fate and transport. So this is Department of Energy, in which the boxes are scaled by the budget. So you can see that the budget's $27 billion a year in fiscal year 10. And what the Department of Energy does is not so much energy as in They're the ones that brought you the Manhattan Project and nuclear weapons and the stewards of the nuclear weapons, and that's a $10 billion a year activity. And then in the bottom right-hand corner, the environmental management is the people that are cleaning up that legacy of waste, and that's a close to $6 billion a year effort. And then the box on the left is the Office of Science, which is the basic science research program at $5 billion. And so I'm in the Office of Basic Science, and I'll describe that a little bit more. The blue dots say places where geoscience research and lie within the department. In the middle of these applied programs that have programs like geothermal energy, fossil energy, geologic carbon sequestration, and radioactive waste repository science, like the Yucca Mountain Project. So DOE is a mission-driven science organization, we do mission-driven science for DOE's energy and environmental missions, and we have a spectrum of research that goes from very basic grand challenge type of things of how nature works, to discovery and use-inspired basic research, to applied research and technology deployment. And so in the Office of Science, we focus on the more basic grand challenges and discovery and use-inspired research. And these research efforts are informed by community-led workshop reports over a range of topics, and that, again, are driven by trying to address DOE's and the nation's basic energy and environmental challenges. So this is an org chart for the Department of Science at $5 billion a year. Again, the boxes are scaled relative to the budget. DOE is a large funder of physical sciences in the United States. So you can see high energy physics, nuclear physics, fusion energy, and then there's also a basic energy sciences, which is largely chemical sciences and material sciences, but there's also a geoscience research component to this, which is on the order of $25 million a year. Basic energy sciences and the Department of Energy in general are also stewards of many national scientific user facilities, the synchrotron light sources, spallation neutron sources, high-end scientific computing facilities that are available for free to the scientific community on a competitive basis. So I work in the Office of Biological Environmental Research, which has a budget of about $600 million a year. And our mission, we have biologists and a biology system science division and a climate environmental sciences division within BER. And our mission is to understand the complex biological, climatic, and environmental systems across these broad range of spatial and temporal scales that we've been talking about here, with a big focus on exploring the frontiers of genome-enabled biology. We were the ones that started the Human Genome Project, and then with NIH brought this to fruition. And now there's a current big focus on bioenergy. Discovering the physical, chemical, and biological drivers and impacts of climate change, and seeking predictive understanding of geochemical, hydrological, and biological processes impacting environmental sustainability and stewardship. So this is a common approach that all of these systems are complex, and that the behavior of the systems, the sum is greater than the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. So by just having a reductive investigation of the parts, you wouldn't get to a holistic understanding of how the whole system works, from biological systems to environmental systems to climate systems. So there's kind of a common approach to, within BER, to the type of science we do, which is kind of very unique within the office of science, to the physics and the chemistry, and to a large degree material sciences that are more trying to get finer understanding of the parts in higher resolution, spatial and temporal resolution, to understand their systems, where we're dealing with the challenges of scale, long time scales with large ranges of complexity over spatial scales that can't fit in your laboratory. So these are the challenges here, to understand these from molecular to global scales, molecules to ecosystems, long time frames, using the integrated science with a tight coupling between theory, observation, experiments, and supporting interdisciplinary research that's, again, driven by DOE's mission for energy and environment, and engaging the national labs, universities, and the private sector. So this is the org chart of the BER where I work. There's two divisions. The $600 million is roughly split between the two, $300 million each. Within this, we have the Biological System Science Division supports a user facility called the Joint Genome Institute that does a lot of sequencing for the scientific community of genetic sequencing. A big focus of the Biological System Science Division is currently on bioenergy and bioenergy research centers, three of them funded at $25 million a year over 5 years. In the Climate Environmental System Science Division, in which I sit, we have climate and earth system modeling. The focus here is using large computers to do global climate models and try to understand and advance those models and understand the uncertainties associated with them and improve them. Atmospheric systems research is largely focused on cloud dynamics and models of clouds and their role in Earth's climate system. And then this group here called environmental system science that I'm going to talk the rest of the talk about, it has two pieces, terrestrial ecosystem science and subsurface biogeochemistry. So these two pieces make up the critical zone. And recently they've been reorganized. They used to be kind of separate groups that have now been put into one group. So it's one team of about four people that are managing these two still distinct, but related programs. They're going to be managed with a consistent approach. And then there's an ARM climate research facility that's looks at cloud dynamics, and the Environmental Molecular Sciences Laboratory that's at PNNL that some of you may have know about and worked at. Okay, so the Terrestrial Ecosystem Science Program really is about understanding carbon cycling in the environment. They have been running for many years FACE experiments, CO2 enrichment experiments at several sites around the country. These experiments are being brought to an end. They're harvesting many of these sites, and the future focus is moving to the Arctic. And plans are underway, and work has already been started, but it's still somewhat in flux exactly what's going to be done, but there will be these large-scale experiments, perhaps very similar to critical zone types of things, but that will involve some forms of manipulation of perhaps warming and involve also a high focus on, a big focus on molecular biology, the role of microbial communities in carbon cycling in Arctic systems. DOE has been a member of the Ameriplex network. We'll continue that effort. And the research program here involves both lab-led and university-led studies. That the university-led studies will have annual solicitations that are available on our website. And the solicitations tend to be inclusive of the whole program, funded on 3-year cycles. I'll come back to this, but this program is a bit in transition. And moving more towards site-specific research, similar to like critical zone observatories, that makes the focus of a larger science program that supports that based on lab and university-led projects. Okay, this is the subsurface biogeochemical research piece. It's $50 million a year. It's focused on DOE's most intractable environmental problems of radionuclides and heavy metal contaminants in the subsurface, legacies of the Cold War and nuclear production of bombs and nuclear fuels. So now this is the systems that we're dealing with in the Climate Environmental Sciences Division. There's the whole Earth global climate modeling endeavor, the cloud physics and aerosol piece, and then the environmental system science piece, which is the terrestrial, which is the critical zone from the bedrock to the top of the top of the canopy. And for the environmental system science, I think put three major components here: the biosphere, which is currently part of the terrestrial ecosystem science focus of that program, soils, which is interlapping these two programs, the terrestrial ecosystem science and subsurface biogeochemical research, and then the deeper beta zone, saturated zone, which is really the primary focus of the contaminant transport and subsurface biogeochemical research. But we're really transitioning to move these programs to be more as one. We still have these separate focus, but they're going to be a unity of approach to this. And so that approach involves iterative and model-driven research to understand the coupled biological, chemical, and physical processes that control the complex behavior of these environmental systems. And again, it's like the three key pieces of the chemistry, microbiology, and physics or hydrology, really driven by quantitative predictive understanding of how these systems work across scales. Iteration between the lab and the field is a really key component of our research programs, and it involves both iterating within laboratory experiments and iterating within field experiments, where we have models that tell us what we think are the largest sources of uncertainty, and then designing experiments and observations to try to test hypotheses to prove our understanding of how those systems work. So iterative testing across scales and in response to varying perturbations, both natural and engineered, leads to a robust understanding of the system behavior. And uncertainty quantification and attribution are important tools to prioritize the iterative process of investigating the structure and function of these complex environmental systems. So this kind of just summarizes the activities that we have going on at our field sites. I'm going to describe three of them, but it involves molecular scale science on up to pore and core and lab scale to the field scale, with high performance computational reactive transport modeling, microbiology, geochemistry, and hydrology, and advanced characterization and monitoring and sensing, similar to the similar techniques that are being used at the critical zones in geophysics, isotopes, microbiology, and so on. So this slide, I'll take a little bit of time to go through it because this really summarizes our complete portfolio in the subsurface biogeochemical research program. It really is anchored by three big field sites. They're funded at $3 million a year for 5 years, extended to 6 years. We're in the fourth year now at these sites. And after 6 years, we're going to recompete and extend forward in some way, either at these sites or at shift our focus to different sites. But one site is at Oak Ridge, Tennessee, looking at uranium transport in the humid environment, uranium and technetium transport, and the role of microbiology in an acidic plume. The other site is at Hanford 300 area in Richland, Washington, along the Columbia River, where there's a very dynamic river, groundwater, river water exchange. The river stage changes by over a meter a day. And there's, again, a uranium plume there that's being pumped and driven by this dynamic river stage. And the third site is that along the Colorado River at Old Rifle, Colorado. It's a uranium mill tailing site in which there's uranium contamination in the soils along the Colorado River. And we're doing active field-scale microbiological experiments where we put in nutrients and we see how the microbial communities catalyze and react with the subsurface biogeochemical environment and how that affects the uranium transport and towards both exploring means to perhaps stabilize, using biological methods to stabilize these these contaminant plumes, as well as just understanding the ultimate fate of these contaminants in nature, so that we can have better predictive models. So the structure of our program is shown below here, in which we have labs, again, with their budget scales, the size of their circle scale to their budgets, extending from like $6.5 million at PNNL down to $1 million for the smaller programs, and then universities. In total, our budget's $50 million. We have about $20 million of university-led research, about $20 million of lab-led research, and the field projects are on the order of $10 million. There's also, and each lab has a very specific focus to what they're doing. PNNL and Berkeley have rather broad portfolios, extend from microbiology, geochemistry, and reactive transport, focused at different sites. PNNL is largely focused at the Hanford 300 area. Berkeley is working at three different sites, the old rifle site, they're working at Savannah River, and the third site is at Hanford 100 area. And we have this other component that we do is this called SITAC project. It's a collaboration with the Office of Advanced Scientific Computing in DOE, and we're funding the development of the next generation of reactive transport models, or research with high performance computation for reactive transport. So for those in the universities that are interested in applying to our program, we have an annual solicitation again that covers the breadth of the things that we do. And we, through these field centers, we make access available to the outside community for samples, for access to the site, so you can do site-specific research that would be a means of tying into this program. Not all the research has to be directly related to these sites, but it just provides kind of columns which focus this community effort. And we also have annual PI meetings in which all the funded researchers get together for 3 days in the spring to discuss our research, and so that's how we manage this particular program. And this is going to be the format for the greater TES, the terrestrial ecosystem format, will be similar, site-specific, in the same kind of structure. So that's the basic research we do, but we also interact very closely with colleagues in the Office of Environmental Management towards trying to translate this research into solutions for these really intractable problems at the DOE site. So we write reports and have plans for going forward. And I just wanted to put this out for the community here, those of you may be interested, is that our colleagues in the Office of Environmental Management and the DOE are leading a $10 million a year effort to build the next generation of reactive transport models. And this is going to be, it's a DOE lab-wide effort. Berkeley, PNNL, Los Alamos, pretty much all the labs are working together to build a community model, which will be open source, modular. It can run on your laptop, and it can run on the world's largest computers, Jaguar. And it's going to be not just for groundwater contamination, but it could be used for deeper subsurface geologic sequestration. It will be being built to have a land surface water interaction connection. So we're hoping that this is really going to be a platform that's going to really a scientific tool that can be used by the whole community. And as you can see here on the description, it says ASTM is a state-of-the-art scientific tool and approach. So going into this, I was somewhat skeptical. Is it really? Do we really need $10 million a year for a new simulator? Is that really what's limiting our understanding? And I very much pushed towards this idea that it's not just the tool, but the approach of how to use that tool. And the fact that it's going to be modular, and there's going to be a whole set of tools going up to it. So a big part of this is the agility to which you can use these tools and the flexibility to use it to make models quicker, more easier, make them more amenable to actually modeling these complex systems in ways that can better connect and drive the experiments and observations. And the fact that it's modular means that you could be looking at surface complexation models and not have to have all the other stuff done. You could just do your model and plug it into an existing framework. And so I do think that's going to be important going forward. So just to end here, I don't think I'm going to have time to go over the whole thing, but I have a set of workshop reports. I'm going to put them at the back of the room on the chair if you want one. There's also a link here. This presentation will be online, so you could get the report online if you'd like. But it was a workshop we ran last year in August on complex system science for subsurface fate and transport with this idea in mind, is that, okay, how do we come up with ways to populate our models with meaningful parameters? We were faced with this complexity. We're really model rich and data poor, so how do we come to grips with this problem? And stop advancing. Well, maybe it's telling me I'm out of time. Oh, there, I just did that. Maybe the mouse isn't working. So the things we talked about at this workshop was just these kind of complementary approaches of reductionism, bottom-up kind of approaches. If you understand the parts, can you understand the whole? With this kind of the strategy being understand and model system behavior as some permutation of some of its scale of parts and blame heterogeneity for any shortcomings, as opposed to more top-down or phenomenological approaches where identify diagnostic variables and transferable macro-scale laws that define, describe high-level system behavior and hope there's some form of universality to that, and if not, maybe blame entropy as being insufficient. But this is really the challenge that we're faced with, and that's what's discussed in the report. And as you may surmise, we need both, right? It's not one or the other, but the report talks about how to use both of these in an informed way. And so we list a set of research challenges that are driving our research programs and our solicitations that range in scale from fundamental processes to lab scale things to field scale processes and go from microbiology to geochemistry to reactive transport, physical hydrology. And so to summarize, this cartoon kind of on the right characterizes the challenges of scales that we're dealing with. And our goal is to identify and understand the key processes controlling the mobility of, in our case, contaminants, but also carbon and nutrients in terrestrial ecosystems, that and then establish linkages across scales of observations to come up with a more robust predictive understanding of how these systems work. And for us at DOE, our challenge is to orient the resources of our national labs together with university-led researchers to have this iterative approach towards iterative understanding of the processes affecting contaminant mobility in the environment, and provide DOE with science-based solutions for its environmental challenges. So, thanks. I think, I can't speak authoritatively to that, but I think they're being brought back into and integrated to the overall. So that's part of this reorganization and refocusing of what's going on. So, I would very much like to see that happen. I think across the portfolio of sciences, it's kind of balkanized for some of these problems, right? And I think there could be a lot of advantages to working together in a coherent way. that we could coordinate either explicitly or implicitly towards these efforts. I mean, like this new $10 million a year effort for the next generation of reactive transport modeling, a big piece of that is, a huge piece of it is the data handling piece, the stuff you were talking about. At our sites, we have a big issue about data handling, and we're putting money into that and setting up databases. We have on the biological side, the microbiology, it's a huge piece of the knowledge base for genetic information about microbiology when you go to these field sites. So if, like in Critical Zone Observatory, you start to do microbiology, you could probably learn a lot, or maybe just take the whole thing that DOE is developing, not us, but even our colleagues in the biological system science side are developing a knowledge base for microbiological information in the environment. So these pieces could very much be coordinated, and we should talk. And I think the good thing though, I'm kind of going on beyond my time, but is that the people you put on your slides, and I didn't put names on my slides, but the communities are overlapping. So Don is not a stranger to us. Susan Brantley, John Chorover, there's many people within both communities that overlap. And so, anyway, right? Yeah.